I remember it well. He had been gone for so long. Every day I looked to see if he was approaching. And then there he was, home again, after being gone for many, many months. It was incredible how the change in him. Oh, he'd always been a kind and gentle man, a learned man, and very reflective. But now, he was different. There was something about his face that just made me wonder as I looked at him. And though he had been kind before, now he was even more kind. And though he had always been a gentle man, he was even more gentle. And just as he has always been reflective, a deep thinker, he was more so. He was different. And then he told me about his journey. Slowly at first. And then the words came faster and faster, as though he couldn't share them fast enough. But I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? I should introduce myself. I am Shimura, wife of one of the Magi who visited the child, the Christ, the King of the Jews. In your tradition, you call my husband Belshazzar. We live in Babylon, where my husband is a wise man, a teacher, an astrologer, an interpreter of dreams. He's part of an ancient priestly caste that has existed for more than 7,000 years, starting within the Median Empire. Magi are found in all parts of the Parthian Empire. East of the eastern frontier of the Roman Empire. Other Magi live in Persia and Parthenia, Bactria, Crocimia, Aria, Media, Samaria, Egypt, Ethiopia, and even in the countries far to the east of us. My husband and the other Magi are members of the upper court, or the upper house of the Megasthenes Council. Their duties include the election of the king of the Parthian Empire. You can say that my husband, although not a king, was a kingmaker. He's also an authority for all religious matters and a teacher of the emperor and the emperor's household. There are many Jews in our country from when they were exiled. And although there are many Jews in the country, my husband is a Zoroastrian. He and others of this ancient sect pay particular attention to the stars and have an international reputation for the science of astrology. But I must make it clear that though your word magic comes from the name Magos or Magi, they did not believe in magicians, and they're strongly opposed to sorcery. And as an astrologer, my husband knows every star in the sky. But one night, a new star appeared. It was so brilliant, brighter than any other star in the sky. And other Magi saw this star as well. I couldn't see it, and members of my household couldn't see it. But he said it was there, and so I knew it must be. But still, I couldn't understand why he was so excited thrilled even. I'd never seen him like that. It was almost as though he knew that he was going to experience something amazing, something wondrous, something holy. Now we know that the star of Bethlehem was not a natural stellar phenomena, but something unexplained by science. As I mentioned, the Magi saw it, but no one else did. And celestial bodies usually move from the east to the west because of how the earth rotates. Yet the star led him and the others south from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And not only that, but it led them directly to the house where Joseph and Mary were staying with the babe. Stopping overhead, no other star, no natural star does that. Now Belshazzar knew the writings of the prophet Daniel, who in the time past had been the chief of the court seers in Persia. Daniel's writings held a prophecy of when the child was to be born, the Messiah. He was also aware of the prophecy of Balaam, who was from the town of Pethor on the Euphrates River near Persia, that mentions a star coming out of Jacob. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise from Israel and batter the brow of Moab and destroy all the sons of tumult. Yes, he knew this was a star, a very special star. His star, a star that the king was born. A star and yet not a star. It was the Shekinah glory. The Shekinah, which literally means the dwelling of God, was the visible presence of God. Centuries before, the Shekinah appeared as a pillar or cloud that led the Israelites by day and a pillar of fire that led them by night. That night, in his excitement, he couldn't wait to get on the road. And so he started to assemble his caravan to go. He called for his manservants. They got the camels ready. And they loaded them with gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. He packed the treasures for the newborn king so that he could present them to him when he found him. And soon he and the other Magi set off on a trip that would take them hundreds and hundreds of miles away and change our lives forever. The trip was long and arduous, but they pressed on toward Jerusalem. And after weeks and weeks of travel, they arrived in Jerusalem and started to inquire about the child. Where is he who was born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star when he rose and have come to worship him. Surely those in Jerusalem would have seen the star too, and they would have been excited and know where this new king was. But no one seemed to know. And they seemed upset, frightened almost, when he would inquire. And so he and the other Magi searched for the child. Soon it came to the attention of King Herod that these visitors from the east were looking for the King of the Jews, the newborn King of the Jews. Herod was dismayed. And he called the chief priests and the scribes of the people to come to see him. And he asked them, "Where is the child to be born?" They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" When Herod heard that, he was filled with fear and anger. And he called Belshazzar and the other magi to him and asked them, when they first saw the star. And he told them that the new king they were looking for was to be born in Bethlehem, not Jerusalem. It was there that he had been born. And so, Belshazzar and the others set forth south from Jerusalem toward Bethlehem. And as they looked into the heavens, there the star was once again, leading them forward, leading them from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And it stopped over a meager house. Not a palace like Herod was in, where they expected to find a king, but a simple house. And when they went in, there they saw Mary, the mother, with the child. Where they had bowed in homage to the king, this new king, they fell to their knees in awe and in worship. They could not believe this child. He told me there was something different about this child, something truly amazing about him. He was unlike any other child that Belshazzar had ever seen. Not in appearance, you know. He was a child, a little boy. But there was something that Belshazzar could not explain about this child. He said he had this feeling of awe and wonder and reverence that he didn't even feel when he first held the child I presented to him. At first, I was rather upset about that. You know how we mothers are, protective of our children. And yet, I could see the difference in him and knew that he had been in the presence of a king and no ordinary king at that. I could see it in his eyes when he spoke of the child. And as I mentioned, they all fell to their knees in adoration and reverence, and they all opened the gifts that they had brought to the child and his mother. They opened caskets of precious gold and the fragrant perfume of frankincense and the anointing oil of myrrh. Costly gifts, gifts fit for a king, gifts fit for a god, and gifts presented to the king. Gifts presented to the very Son of God. Gold is a very precious metal and very valuable. Did you know that King Solomon's drinking cups were made of pure gold? And the Ark of the Covenant was clad in pure gold. Gold, fit for a king. And when they presented the new king with the gift of gold, they hailed him with an acknowledgement of royalty. This child in this humble home, they knew, was royalty. Gold is beautiful and long-lasting. And the gift of gold represented Jesus as a king with an everlasting throne, a treasure befitting royalty. Although royalty in the home of a young, poor family, this little babe, this little boy, was to be honored as royalty, no matter what the circumstances suggested. Frankincense is a white resin or gum. It's obtained from a tree by making an incision in the bark and allowing the gum to flow out. This gift also was precious in both value and in meaning. It's highly fragrant when burned and was therefore used in worship, where it was used as a pleasant offering to God. It's a symbol of holiness and righteousness. The gift of frankincense is an acknowledgement of Jesus' priesthood, setting him apart from a typical king. And it was a symbol of his willingness to become a sacrifice, giving himself up, similar to a burnt offering. And finally, the most bittersweet of all of the gifts, myrrh. Myrrh was also a product of Arabia, and it was obtained from a tree in the same manner as the frankincense. Myrrh had been imported to Egypt in droves for embalming rituals, and that practice filtered out through the surrounding areas. But even without the mummification process, myrrh was connected with death and burial. A disheartening gift for a new mother to receive, yet beautiful in light of her understanding of his purpose. While Middle Eastern regions use myrrh ceremonially, the Far East used it for healing. It was also sometimes mingled with wine to form an article of drink. Myrrh symbolizes bitterness, suffering, and affliction. After Balthazar and the others presented their gifts, they prepared to leave the Christ child and again knelt in homage. He told me how they didn't want to leave the house. They didn't want to leave the presence of this child, but they knew that their time with the child was over and they must return to their homes. And although Herod had told them to return to him to tell them all about the child they were seeking, they didn't feel right about that. There was something about the man that seemed evil. They couldn't put their finger on it, but they just had this sense that he was not what he wanted to appear to be. And then God warned them in a dream not to return to Herod, that their instincts were right. And so they left and started home by a different way. When we heard what happened after Herod learned that they had left without returning to report to him, and he was furious, so furious, in fact, that he ordered the slaughter of all little boys under the age of 2 in Bethlehem and the surrounding area. Fortunately, right after Balthazar and the other magi left, Joseph also was warned in a dream to take the child and his mother and to escape to Egypt. And they left that night. Balthazar and the others traveled onward home. And after 4 long months of travel, he finally returned home, a changed man. Being in the presence of Jesus does that to you. And yet Herod, the chief priests, and the scribes reacted differently. One may say that there were three ways that people responded to Jesus. Herod displayed open hostility and hatred toward him, and because of that, innocents suffered. The chief priests and the scribes were indifferent to Jesus, all the time retaining their religious respectability. And although they knew the most, and they knew about the promised Messiah, they failed to act on that truth. And then there were the Gentile magi who sought out Jesus, the Jewish Messiah, and worshiped him at great cost. What about you? With whom do you identify? Herod? The priests and scribes? Or the magi? With which do you approach Jesus? Hatred and hostility? Indifference? Or awe and worship? It's so good to have him back home again. And as I said, he has changed. What a beautiful, beautiful experience. Because of his change, our whole household has changed. There's a new outlook on life. We are blessed.